I just think it's unbelievably great that we could sit here and listen to people talking about we are going to have a tournament. I think that's exciting. Yes. I want to dance about it. I'm going to get up and dance, baby. Oh, are you kidding me? We got a tournament. Yeah. Oh, we got a tournament. Yes, sir. Let's do it, baby. Let's do it.
There is no rite of spring quite like the gyrations of our old friend Dicky V. After a year off, the 2021 NCAA tournament field is finally set, from top overall seed Gonzaga, all the way to the four standby teams that are waiting to fill in if COVID strikes. So, yes, the big dance might involve even more madness. And Jay Billis is here to help us fill out our brackets and tell us who could win the entire thing. I'm Pablo Torre. It's Monday, March 15th. This is ESPN Daily. Jay Billis, it feels like you might be the busiest man in America right now, so thank you for making some time for me, man. I appreciate it.
Busiest man in America. This is the best time of year, so I'm happy to be busy.
Jay Billis is a literally and figuratively towering figure in the world of college basketball. So it is about 9:45 p.m. Eastern on Selection Sunday. You've been on TV all day. I've seen you offering wisdoms. I've seen you gas bagging, as you yourself like to say from time and again. I'm curious, Jay, how long does it take you to fill out your bracket?
Well, we have to do it in about 2 minutes when we're on the air during this bracketology selection show. So it's sort of the first thoughts that you have, and you wind up picking an upset or two in each region in the first couple of days. But then I wind up going pretty chalky after that. And then I write an article called The More Than 5 Minute Bracket, where I think about it for more than a couple of minutes, and I don't do any better. So I'm not sure that my first instincts aren't just as good.
Well, I'm glad to get you somewhere between the first and second drafts of history, because I'm staring at an empty bracket. You have hastily filled out yours. And I want to get into this because we have the top four seeds, Gonzaga, Baylor, Illinois, Michigan. They're top lining the four geographic regions, Jay, that aren't really geographic regions this year because everybody's going to be crammed into Indianapolis in something that feels bubble-like. Is there one team among those four top seeds that seems or feels the most vulnerable to you?
Yeah, Michigan, because of Isaiah Livers. You don't know with this stress reaction in his foot whether he's going to play, and if he does play, whether he's going to be the same. I mean, Michigan's a good team without him, but they're elite offensively with him because of how skilled he is. He's a good passer, good cutter, good scorer. You know, he's terrific scorer, but without him, I think they're a lot more beatable, if you will. And they have I do think they have somewhat of a difficult path. Alabama is the two in their region, and I think Alabama's got a very good chance to reach a Final Four. What's the best thing I think, Pablo, for the Big Ten teams is they're out of the Big Ten now, and they don't have to beat each other up, and they can go take a swing at somebody else. And I think they're all going to like that.
So I want to get into the Alabama thing. You just mentioned it. They're sitting right below Michigan as the two seed. And Jay, I'm still staggered by, I guess, the following collection of words. Second seeded Alabama versus 15th seeded Rick Pitino and Iona. So let's take the first half of that matchup first. People know Alabama, obviously, as a football institution, the football institution. What do they know about their basketball team?
Yeah, Alabama is really talented and really good this year in basketball. Their coach, Nate Oates, is a math guy. He is an analytics guy. So last year, they shot a ton of threes. He believes in free throws, open threes, and layups. And so there are not a lot of mid-range shots taken. But this year, they're excellent defensively. That may be the best part of their team, is they can really guard. They're long-armed and athletic on the wings. They've got a player named Herbert Jones, who has always been a really good defender. He's 6'8". He's really kind of a point guard at 6'8", and he does everything. He's kind of a triple-double type player, and defensive player of the year in the league in the SEC, and the player of the year in the league. And I think he makes them different. So they're legit. They could have been a one seed and were worthy of it, But because of how good Baylor, Gonzaga have been, they were locks, and then how good Michigan wound up being, and then Illinois. I don't think anybody would argue with those four as number one seeds, but Alabama was the clear fifth overall.
So the other strange part of that specific matchup is that Alabama, now being the class of the SEC.
Watford, short, rebound, put back, no good, no, it will not go in. They had a couple of chances. Alabama wins the SEC championship.
In a year when the Alabama football of SEC basketball, which is to say the University of Kentucky, they're out of the tournament entirely. And so in comes Rick Pitino, John Calipari's old arch nemesis, who seems to be immortal, Jay, at this point. Like, he survives exile in Greece. He survives a scandal-ridden ouster at Louisville before that to make it back to the tournament. What do you make of Rick Pitino in 2021 at this point?
Well, he's just a great basketball coach, and I think he's been humbled by all of this. He really does love the game, and he loves teaching and coaching and being around it. And I don't think he can't just retire and play golf and hang out in Miami. He'll do that eventually. But to be at Iona, a place that has a really rich basketball tradition and has gone to the tournament the last 5 years out of the Metro Atlantic. So he took over a program that was pretty good shape. They're not going to beat Alabama. I mean, they've got good players. Like Isaiah Ross is a good player. He transferred in from UMKC. So they've got some talent. They're not without it, and they play fast and all that stuff, but they're not going to beat Alabama.
So it is possible to use Rick Pitino to draw a line to like a million different characters in the sport. I want to draw it straight to one of his former players on the Knicks, one of your contemporaries in college basketball, which is to say Patrick Ewing, who just became the first person in Big East history to be the most outstanding player on a tournament champion and the head coach of a tournament champion in the conference, with Georgetown beating Creighton by 25 this weekend, Jay, at Madison Square Garden, in some sort of poetic victory for Patrick Ewing.
For the first time since 2007, the Georgetown Hoyas are Big East tournament champions and NCAA bound. Coach Thompson, I know you love it, big fella.
I want to pick 12-seeded Georgetown over 5-seeded Colorado based on the sheer fact that that happened and I'm from New York. Am I insane to do that, Jay Billis?
No, because they're a good three-point shooting team. They've got size, and they're on a roll right now. I mean, they're basically a 500 team. They were under 500 before they ripped off four in a row in Madison Square Garden. Now, the only thing, Pablo, is if Villanova had been healthy and they had Colin Gillespie, I don't think we'd be talking about Georgetown right now. I think Villanova would have beat them, and it wouldn't be an issue. But they were hurt, and Georgetown got past them, and they had a wonderful run in the tournament, and one that we'll probably all never forget in that regard. The question is, can they follow it up? And they've got Colorado, which is, I think, a good team. They've got an outstanding point guard and a guy named McKinley Wright, who I would say, outside of Jay Humphries and Chauncey Billups, is probably the best point guard they've had at Colorado. And they've had good teams there. And they've got a good big guy in Evan Batty. They can shoot it. They defend well. They're the best free throw shooting team in the country. I think they shoot 83%. So if they're not the best, they might be second. But they're right there as the best free throw shooting team in the country. So if they get fouled, they're going to knock their free throws down. It's just a question of, can Georgetown carry over a four-day run in one place and carry it over a week later when they haven't done that all year long? You know, we've seen it before, but usually, you know, like I always hearken back to when VCU went to the Final Four in 2011. So the question is, Georgetown did something in the Big East tournament they didn't do during the rest of the season. Can they do it again? And the truth is, I don't know the answer to that. It feels like they can, but it's I like their initial matchup. I don't favor them against Florida State if Florida State gets past UNC Greensboro.
So the other end of that spectrum in terms of teams that have pretty much been the same all season is obviously Gonzaga at the very top of the field. So switching over to the West region now for a second here, Jay, where Gonzaga lives. They're 26-0, undefeated, the resounding top seed. How manageable is the path that they got from the committee? Is this the sort of team that can make history as daunting as history in the tournament as a concept is?
Yes. So Gonzaga has, so in that region in the West, Gonzaga is the one, Iowa is the two, Kansas is the three, and Virginia is the four. So I can't remember, maybe this has happened before, but I can't remember a region where the number one has played the two, three, and four, and not only beaten each one of them, beaten the hell out of them. I mean, Gonzaga beat the hell out of every one of these teams. And everybody can say, Well, it was early and all that stuff. They beat the hell out of them. And the truth is they beat the hell out of everybody. Gonzaga's, I think, only had one game where it was under double digits, the margin. So they've been better than everybody they've played by a ton. But the other part of it, Pablo, is Kansas and Virginia are battling COVID protocols. So I don't see a legitimate threat to them. Look, everybody can play poorly, but I just don't see all of those guys that Gonzaga has playing poorly together. I just don't see that happening.
You got to talk to Bill Self on television today, Jay, and you kind of got to talk a little bit about what COVID has done to his team and the impact of it. Can you catch up those who are not familiar with what Kansas is dealing with right now?
Okay, right before the Big 12 tournament, so a week ago or so, Kansas announced that two players would not be going to Kansas City with them to play the tournament. Tristan Anaruna, one of their bench players, and David McCormick, their starting center, who has had a really good second half of the year, and they've been essentially playing through him, and he's been their leading scorer during that period and has really been excellent, frankly. So they were not going to play with Kansas during the Big 12 tournament. And then right into the tournament, after they won their first game, I think they beat Oklahoma. They announced that they had a positive, and they had to bow out of the tournament. So as far as I know, it's one player. It doesn't sound like that player is going to be able to play in the NCAA tournament with Kansas, but they're going to be able to play. So they've been in Kansas City ever since. They don't have McCormick and Anaruna. They're expecting those players back. But when they get to Indianapolis, they're going to have to meet them in Indy. And then you don't know, they're practicing now, but you don't know when they're going to practice with their full complement of players. So it's just kind of an odd situation with all of these protocols. There's so many moving parts because all the decisions that are being made before they get to Indy are made in consultation with their local health department. And same thing for Virginia. Virginia had the same thing happen at the ACC tournament. They had a positive. And so they got with their medical advisory board in Charlottesville, Virginia, and they started their quarantine while they were in Greensboro. The Charlottesville Health Department allowed them to bus back in quarantine. So they bussed back to Charlottesville in quarantine. And it sounds like, if reports are accurate, that they're not going to get to Indianapolis till Friday, and then they play on Saturday. So I happen to think that's a good thing for them. Because I would rather be in my own room quarantined in Charlottesville than be sending out hostage videos in Indianapolis.
Jay, after the break, I need to talk to you a little bit more about COVID's impact on this year's tournament and how else March Madness is going to be different.
Vivid Seats wants to get you to the games you love this spring. Experience every pitch, assist, and game-winning shot live and in person. And the best part? Each transaction is a step toward a free 11th ticket with Vivid Seats rewards. Score unbeatable perks like free tickets, surprise seat upgrades, and annual birthday deals. As the official ticketing partner of ESPN, Vivid Seats is offering you $20 off your first $200 ticket purchase with code DAILY. That's code DAILY. Visit VividSeats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats. Experience it live.
Jay, was there any doubt in your mind that we would be getting to watch the NCAA tournament this year?
Zero. When all the power conferences decided they were going to play football, I knew we were going to have a tournament. I did not know whether we would have a full basketball season. But, you know, Pablo, I don't want to be too cynical about this. And I don't mean this to be cynical. There is a bag of money with $1 billion in it at the end of the tournament. They're getting to the end of the tournament. And then they said, no bubbles. We will not play in bubbles. Even the commissioners of the Pac-12 and the Big Ten said that. The commissioners. And what do we have in Indianapolis? We have a bubble to end all bubbles. They even trademarked Battle in the Bubble. The NCAA trademarked that. So, look, I'm not saying it's the wrong thing. I'm just saying we are certainly not living up to the rhetoric and the stated values we set forth. Another thing, like when a lot of coaches were saying, hey, it's too much of a risk to play in our conference tournament with the NCAA tournament right afterwards. We've got to test negative for 7 days. Like, it doesn't make sense. That went away pretty quick because all their administrators said, we have content that we have to provide our media partners. We're playing and you're playing. And everybody played. Nobody opted out. Everybody played. The players in Indianapolis are not allowed to leave their hotels except to go to the arena and play. They're not allowed to leave the hotel. Look, I'm not saying it's the wrong thing, but I asked some people, hey, name me another student that has been put on an airplane for a university endeavor during the pandemic. And nobody can name one. And we're doing it for money. And that's okay. But we should admit it. And when we admit it, then we need to cut the players in on it.
Yeah. No, Jay, this is a cynicism safe space when it comes to these economic matters. Yeah, I don't think that the first chair, you know, violinist at Stanford is currently in a quarantine situation waiting to perform for media partners like ourselves right now.
Yeah, and nobody's saying, but the kids want to play. The kids want to play the cello.
Of course.
They keep calling them kids when some of these players have their own children.
But, Jay, as all of these unpaid employees that we like to call kids are descending onto Indianapolis, for this thing, to be clear again, full transparency, I'm going to watch all of. Like, I love this stuff, you love this stuff, but it's weird. It's weird that it's going to be in this highly controlled environment. It's weird that they're going to be four standby teams, which kind of makes me think of waiting at an airplane gate kind of now. And so you have Louisville and Colorado State, St. Louis, Ole Miss, just waiting there, waiting for some amount of chaos. Can you explain how that part of this formula is going to work?
But the first four teams out in order, the ones that are going to get put in the field. So you can fill a bracket out on Sunday night, Monday morning, and there can be a new bracket on Tuesday. They're not going to reshuffle all that much. If a team has to drop out or teams have to drop out, they'll take the next teams in line that didn't get in and invite them to jump into that spot. So Louisville would get the first phone call and say that Team X can't play. They're a four seed, so you're going to slide in and play the 13. Or vice versa. You're the 13, you're going to play a 4. Then the 4 seed's going to go, well, that's not fair. I'd rather play the other one. The chances of there being a problem, I think, are pretty slim, given all the protocols they have in place. You know, they don't want to have this interrupted because they promised all this stuff to CBS. And they need to deliver on it, and they're going to.
I want to move back into the bracket part of this and the south part of the bracket, the south side, because I want to talk about Baylor for a second here. Baylor has a pretty tough path, it looks like, in front of them. They got Carolina, they got Villanova, like pretty good teams. You got to ask Jared Butler what the most important thing for Baylor was, and he said defense. Does his answer there make sense to you?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. They're a great defensive team, and they've got... You know, they've got three of their players that are qualified, I think, for National Defensive Player of the Year. Like Jared Butler led the Big 12 in steals. Davion Mitchell, his teammate, was second. Davion Mitchell led the Big 12 in assists, and Jared Butler was second. Mark Vidal is like a linebacker. He's kind of like Rico Gathers used to be for them. And what, you know, both he and Davion Mitchell are up for they're finalists for National Defensive Player of the Year. You know, it's all on one team. Like, one of the things about their path, like, I'd be surprised if North Carolina beats Wisconsin in that 8-9 game because of guard play. I think Wisconsin's got better guard play. But because they rebounded so well, you know, they certainly can win. But Villanova's a diminished team because Colin Gillespie is gone for them. Purdue has a fair amount of size, but I think that Baylor is considerably better. And then the bottom end of the bracket, only one team's coming out of there, and it's probably going to be Ohio State. So you're going to play somebody good in the Elite Eight, really good. But I don't think Baylor has that bad of a path to get to the Elite Eight and ultimately the Final Four.
Pivoting to the Midwest here for a second, anybody who cares about NBA prospects has now been made aware of Cade Cunningham at Oklahoma State. I want to see a lot of Cade Cunningham this month, Jay, because I'm one of those people who cares a bunch about NBA prospects. How likely am I to get a bunch of Cade Cunningham? How hard is the path in front of Oklahoma State?
Really hard. I think they could very well be out in the first weekend. First of all, they got screwed on their seed. They're a four. There's no way they should be a four. I don't think that was a good decision. But, you know, reasonable minds can differ on that. They got a tough draw with the 13 seed. They got Liberty. And Liberty is basically like playing Virginia. They play the exact same defense. They play a pack. It's called a pack line defense. They burn a ton of clock so they can shorten a game on you. And Oklahoma State is a younger team. It's hard to speed up Liberty. And they've got good guards. Like Darius McGee is a good scorer, and he's got uncanny accuracy on his shot, and he can make a lot of shots. And he's used to playing at that, obviously used to playing at that tempo because that's what they do. They've got Elijah Cuffey, who's the defensive player the year in their league. So they've got a number of guys that can guard. And they've got some pretty good size. So, look, I think Oklahoma State's better than Liberty, but can Liberty beat them? You're darn right they can. If they win that game, so let's say they win their first one, they're still playing in the first week. It's not even a weekend, but they're playing in the second round. Then they're probably going to get Tennessee. And Tennessee is every bit as athletic as they are. The only problem with Tennessee is John Fulkerson took that, you know, UFC quality shot against Florida and was out in the next game with that a concussion protocol. So I don't know if he'll be back. That could diminish Tennessee a little bit. But man, they played really well against Alabama, and I think they're every bit as good as Oklahoma State and can beat them in the second round. So I thought they got a rough seed there.
So this brings me to maybe the most important question of the day, Jay, and you'll have to forgive me here because I'm sure people have been mocking you and getting on you for this for weeks now, perhaps. But you just came from covering the ACC tournament in Greensboro. Duke is not in this tournament for the first time in 26 years. I was hoping for like a sponsor's exemption for Duke. I wanted the committee to like, hey, recognize that we do want to see like the big guy out on stage, even if like, you know, it wasn't totally deserved. What do you make of where your alma mater is right now? Are you concerned? Are you numb to it? Are you tired of even being asked to discuss this?
I'm not tired of being asked to discuss it because that's my job, so I'm cool with it. Duke, Kentucky, to some extent, Michigan State, North Carolina. You know, we had a lot of discussions about what's wrong with the Blue Bloods this year, and it was different reasons for different teams. So Kentucky and Duke had the two best recruiting classes in the country, but they had the best recruiting classes because of the number of really good players they had rather than superstars because the superstars in the class either went to the G League, which Jalen Green and Jonathan Kuminga went to the G League. Mm. Cade Cunningham went to Oklahoma State. Jalen Suggs went to Gonzaga. And Evan Mobley went to USC. And, Duke and Kentucky didn't get the biggest shots of the class. Number one and number two recruiting classes are different every year. Like when Duke had Zion Williamson and R.J. Barrett and Cam Reddish, nobody was questioning one and done. They're questioning it now. They were on a roller coaster ride the whole year. They were never going to be back to what they have been over the years. That wasn't this team. You just hated that the opportunity was taken away from them because of COVID to give it another shot.
So, Jay, before I free you for the rest of your responsibilities, which I assume are endless, I do need to ask you for your Final Four and who you have winning this thing, assuming you are ready to make that declaration with me here.
Yeah, it's pretty chalky. I've got Gonzaga, Alabama is a two seed. I think Baylor is going to make it in Illinois. And then I've got Gonzaga and Illinois in the final with Gonzaga winning it. I just really think they're just super talented offensively. And they're better defensively than they get credit. But I like their path, one. And I think their team is terrific. And they've got a great vibe about them. Same thing with Illinois. Those two teams have the best vibe and the best spirit that I've seen this year.
Jay Billis, thank you for your vibes on ESPN Daily.
Thanks for having me.
All right, up next, how the WNBA changed the entire conversation around Breonna Taylor.
When you're on a business trip, you know what completely goes off the rails? Your workout routine, especially when you book a hotel that doesn't have a gym. So what ends up happening is you do a few push-ups and sit-ups in your room, run around the block, or just skip it entirely. Lame. If you just stay at La Quinta by Wyndham, you'll discover there's a fully equipped fitness center at every location. Now you can wake up and power your buys and tries the right way or de-stress with some cardio. The choice is yours. Tonight, La Quinta. Tomorrow, you shine. Book direct at LQ.com.
Here's another story I want you to know. Over the last year or so, we've talked about sports and, as in sports and social justice, sports and voter registration. Today, I want to talk about Breonna Taylor and sports. It's been 1 year since she was killed by police, and the WNBA took up the Say Her Name campaign for their 2020 season, dedicating it to the memory of Breonna Taylor and women like her, victims of police violence. The league went beyond the idea of sports and instead, players talked explicitly about how Breonna Taylor was like them, and the direct impact of her death on their lives. Our own LaChyna Robinson recently sat down with the WNBA's Natasha Cloud, who led the Washington Mystics to a championship in 2019 and then sat out the 2020 season to fight for social reform. As part of her podcast, Around the Rim, LaChyna has started a conversation series called I'm Speaking. And so here's Natasha Cloud speaking on that show about Breonna Taylor.
Even still today, I still feel all the same emotions, the same feelings, the same trauma that I felt at that very moment. Justice still hasn't been brought to her family. That's what I consistently think of. And so this is why we're continuing to fight this fight, is so that no other family has to live through what her family had to live through. But it was really tough as a Black woman in America. This summer was beyond tough. The fact of George Floyd, we can walk out our doors and our lives can be at an all-time threat. And then we can be here. I can be on a panel in the safety of my home and my life is still at a threat. It affected me greatly in my everyday life. And it was hard. It was heavy. It still is very heavy. And then obviously with my career, it's what led me to sitting out. George Floyd, Breonna Taylor, Ahmaud Arbery, Say Their Names. These are the names that made me feel in my heart of hearts that I needed to be better for my community, that I needed to be a voice for the voiceless. And at this moment in our country, the climate's never been like this. And so that was an extra stress on me to, okay, this is bigger than the game of basketball. I need to use my God-given platform to be better and be a voice for my community.
And when you say, you know, it was heavy and it was a lot, how did you cope? Because we don't often enough talk about coping strategies. And I know there was one time where I looked up and you were everywhere. You were writing articles, you were on panels, you were, I mean, in addition to opting out of the WNBA season, which people may look at that and say whatever they want to say, but basketball is your livelihood. That is where you get your passion. That is where your joy is. So how did you cope during what you've experienced over the last year?
It was hard. It was just being honest. Something that isn't talked about in the Black culture is mental health and how this trauma that goes on in our country affects us. And so having basketball taken away from me, and I opted out voluntarily, but also we were in a pandemic. So we were confined to our homes. And so I tell people, me sitting out, I've never been more exhausted in my life, because it not only takes an emotional toll on you, but it's also a toll to have to explain to people why you're fighting this fight. It's a toll to explain Black trauma to unopened ears. And so I was working from like 9 to 5 every night. And there just became a point where even my wife was like, you got to turn your phone off. You got to turn your phone off, whatever it may be. If you got to watch Netflix, if you got to go upstairs, take a long shower, take a bath, you need to find something that can bring peace to you at the end of the day, because you're constantly on go. You're constantly reliving these traumas. You're constantly being vulnerable. You need to be able to offset that in self-care. And so for me, it was honestly just sitting with our dog, sitting with my wife, spending time with my parents, just detaching from the world at its craziest points. But it was important to my mental health and being able to do what I wanted to do within the community and in this fight for social reform.
And the WNBA isn't done fighting either. The league isn't done saying her name. They're committed to invoking causes as part of their whole athletic mission. And Natasha Cloud is going to be a part of that too, as she returns to her day job as point guard of the Mystics this coming season. A player who will once again be worth watching. And a voice that will once again be worth hearing. I'm Pablo Torre. This has been ESPN Daily. I'll talk to you tomorrow.